I think it's interesting to see how threat actors grow these days. You know, we're talking about, you know, use of Amazon S3 buckets and GitHub, which in the initial part of this report from ESET isn't too crazy. But where I find it interesting, Chris, just to watch them grow and develop, right? It's kind of like watching a child grow up. You're like, oh, look at that new thing they're doing. Look at this thing that they're trying, you know? And we see them moving past certain pieces of malware and starting to utilize this technique versus that technique.
All right. How you doing today, Matt Bromley?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing well. How are you today, sir?
I'm on the mend. Yeah, I think I let everybody know we moved over the weekend, and then Monday I immediately woke up with pink eye.
Oh, no.
It's been horrible. It's been absolutely horrible.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to hear that. That is not fun at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. But I feel like I'm on the mend, still a little gritty. But I have my camera on again, which I haven't for most of the week because nobody wants to see that.
You can always use, there's filters and stuff they have for that, I think, right?
Yeah. The video editor will take care of it.
There we go.
Yeah. All right. Let's just get to it. I know you got something going and I got something to do too. So here we go. GitHub has confirmed that roughly 3,800 internal repositories were accessed in a supply chain compromise tied to the hacking group Team PCP. The attackers claimed responsibility for the intrusion on an underground forum, initially stating that 4,000 repositories had been compromised and offering allegedly stolen source code and internal organizational data for sale at a starting price of $50,000. GitHub launched an investigation shortly after the claim surfaced and later acknowledged that the attackers' estimates was broadly consistent with its own findings. According to the company, the activity appears limited to GitHub internal repositories rather than customer repositories or hosted projects. The compromise originated from a poisoned Visual Studio Code extension installed by a GitHub employee. While GitHub did not identify the malicious extension or specify what data was accessible from the employee's machine, researchers emphasize that extensive permissions granted to VS Code extensions are common. According to Aikido security researcher Chris Erickson, extensions can access nearly all developer workstation data, including SSH keys, cloud credentials, authentication tokens, and other sensitive secrets. GitHub responded by rotating critical credentials immediately, prioritizing high-impact secrets first, while continuing to review logs and monitor for additional malicious activity. The incident is being viewed as part of a broader escalation in software supply chain attacks targeting developer tooling ecosystems. Team PCP has been linked to several other attacks throughout 2026 involving platforms and projects including Tribi, Checkmarks, Bitwarden, CLI, and TanStack. Researchers say these attacks increasingly focus on compromising developer environments rather than production infrastructure directly. Aikido Security's Mackenzie Jackson noted that developer workstations have become a primary target because they provide direct access to source code, credentials, and internal systems. He also argued that many organizations still lack visibility into what extensions and packages developers install locally, creating a persistent blind spot for security teams. The attack highlights the growing security risks surrounding software development ecosystems and third-party tooling dependencies. A single compromised extension installed on one employee workstation was reportedly sufficient to expose thousands of internal repositories. Security researchers continue to warn that traditional controls often fail to monitor or validate the integrity of developer-side tooling, especially extensions that may be newly published or insufficiently vetted. The incident also reinforces ongoing concerns about the broader open-source supply chain, where attackers increasingly target trusted development platforms and packaged ecosystems as initial access vectors. GitHub stated that its investigation remains ongoing and said a full incident report will be published later. The company continues to analyze forensic data, validate credential rotations, and watch for follow-on exploitation attempts related to the breach. The attack comes amid a wider increase in supply chain compromises across the software industry, with multiple related incidents involving package repositories and development infrastructure already reported in 2026. I mean, I've seen it in every organization I've ever been in where developers just have access to all the things and don't want any controls. And I'm special. I do all the things that matter. So now it's coming to bite us.
Wait, Chris, are we working together again? Sounds all too familiar. First off, Team PCP, yet another headline, huh? Mm. Yet another headline. These guys are getting a little bit more famous here. I kind of look at this as a really interesting, what I'm looking for here. Yet another study, yet another study of where supply chain security, supply chain compromise, and things like that is coming to play here. I'm not picking on GitHub in particular, just kind of, this is like, you know, N plus one times that we've talked about these types of compromises and whatnot. I think this is kind of one of those situations where, once again, you know, and maybe as an industry, we just need better control over like that software supply chain side of things. Was the result of an employee installing a poisoned VS Code extension. So Chris, there we go. We can back it up to a malicious library, likely tied to, or a malicious library or malicious extension. I don't know any other way to frame it. Someone installed the wrong thing. I don't think they did it maliciously, but they did it. How they got to install that thing, we'll never know, right? Were they looking for something and they just didn't vet the stars? They didn't vet the builder, the developer, or like, was it?
Or I'll go one step further and say maybe the developer of the extension downloaded an NPM package that compromised their ecosystem. And
maybe, or like, was it about where I was going with that is like, was it a fish? Was it one of those like, so like a job interview style thing? I mean, we Team PCP has been having a heyday and so many things going on these days and whatnot. We won't know for sure, but regardless, it just increases the level of security we need to wrap around software supply chains. That's really my big takeaway here. I don't think that's a surprise for anyone. It's just like we gotta up the ante here. We gotta make it a little bit more difficult for adversaries to get these footholds because they're gaining extremely valuable footholds very quickly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And I'm going to share this article with our engineering team on Slack. And I suggest any of the defenders out there do too. Just kind of like, hey, yes, you don't want to be that person, right?
No, you don't. Vet what you're installing.
All right. Next up, China-aligned threat actor Webworm has shifted its targeting focus from Asia to Europe, according to a newly published report by ESET. The campaign has affected government organizations in Belgium, Italy, Serbia, Spain, and Poland, with additional activity observed in South Africa. The research covers operations between early 2024 and early 2025 and documents a significant evolution in the group's tactics, techniques, and procedures. Webworm was originally associated with malware families such as McRat and Troculus, but has increasingly moved towards using proxy and tunneling infrastructure that blends into legitimate network activity. One of the more notable developments in the group's adoption of unconventional command and control infrastructure: in 2025, Webworm introduced two new backdoors named Echo Creep and Graphworm. Echo Creep uses Discord as its command and control channel, while Graphworm relies on Microsoft Graph API and OneDrive endpoints. ESET observed the attackers using Discord to upload files, receive commands, and send execution reports from compromised systems. Different Discord servers were assigned to individual victims, while Graphworm used separate OneDrive directories per target. The attackers also staged malware and tooling in GitHub repositories, allowing compromised systems to retrieve payloads from public infrastructure that appears legitimate at first glance. The report highlights Webworm's broader emphasis on stealth and proxy-based communications. Rather than depending exclusively on recognizable malware families, the group has increasingly adopted SOX proxies and VPN technologies, including SoftEther, VPN. ESET also documented the use of tools such as IOX, Chainworm, Smux Proxy, Worm FRP, and Worm Socket to support encrypted communications, lateral movement, and traffic chaining between internal and external hosts. According to the researchers, these tools may allow Webworm to create a larger hidden network by leveraging compromised victim systems as relay infrastructure. Some of the proxy services were hosted on cloud infrastructure associated with Vulture and IT7 networks. ESET's attribution work involved decrypting Discord-based command traffic associated with Echo Creep, which ultimately led researchers to GitHub repositories and infrastructure tied to known Webworm IP addresses. The report also notes that the threat actor used Worm FRP to retrieve configuration data from a compromised Amazon S3 bucket, demonstrating continued experimentation with cloud-hosted infrastructure. The initial access vector remains unclear, although ESET observed the use of open-source vulnerability scanners targeting exposed web servers and directories, suggesting exploitation of internet-facing vulnerabilities may play a role in the compromise chain. The researchers believe Webworm's primary objective is espionage and persistence within targeted environments. ESET researcher Eric Howard said the operators appear interested in moving as deeply as possible into victim networks to identify pivot points and maintain long-term access. To defend against this activity, ESET recommends organizations prioritize patching externally exposed systems and reducing unnecessary asset exposure. The company also advises monitoring for communication patterns involving non-standard application connections to Discord, Microsoft Graph, or Amazon S3 endpoints, especially when those services are not part of normal enterprise workflows. Yeah, I mean, I'm always impressed. You know, we don't get impressed by the bad guys, but I'm always impressed by the Chinese APTs and how they're able to leverage existing infrastructure to move around and stay stealthy.
I think it's interesting to see how threat actors grow these days. You know, we're talking about, you know, use of Amazon S3 buckets and GitHub, which in the initial part of this report from ESET isn't too crazy. But where I find it interesting, Chris, just to watch them grow and develop, right? It's kind of like watching a child grow up. You're like, oh, look at that new thing they're doing. Look at this thing that they're trying. You know, and we see them moving past certain pieces of malware and starting to utilize this technique versus that technique. Awesome article from the folks over at ESET. For any of our defenders who are listening, tons of IOCs inside of here. Brush up on things like GraphWarm, Echo Creep, and some of the other parts of their toolkit that they use. This GraphWarm is pretty interesting, utilizing Microsoft Graph API for command and control or C2 comms. Really interesting stuff, right? Utilizing OneDrive to receive commands, but just really good knowledge and usage of how that API is used and how to misuse it as well. Some great IOCs at the end of this, really good technical report for anyone who's, again, you know, kind of nervous or in these regions or, you know, needs to be paying attention to this type of stuff. I highly recommend this. I would also look for some high level indicators here too, Chris. You know, the abuse of Microsoft Graph, I mean, that may be very straightforward. If you don't have Microsoft in your environment, you might be able to pinpoint some of that network traffic. Discord-based backdoors, again, it doesn't mean Discord itself is inherently bad. It just means that, hey, there's something else or another indicator for us to pivot on. Network traffic analysis or NDR is going to be critical in this just because there is so much different varying usage of different protocols and different endpoints that they're utilizing, S3, as we talked about earlier, Graph API, Discord, so on and so forth. Last but not least is the on-disk presence. And this is once again where we get to that kind of least common denominator here. Modifications of IP config, some very, very specific artifacts being left in different operations, creation of like download folders, stuff in Windows temp, RAR, gzip files, all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of good indicators to build out here. And I think if you're anyone who's in a defense or a detection engineering capacity, and this is something that is on your radar, it should be relatively trivial for you to get some coverage in place here.
Awesome. All right. Next up, this one from Zach Allen's Detection Engineering Weekly newsletter. Totally recommend it. Always a good read. Researchers have uncovered a previously undocumented Microsoft 365 account takeover panel that integrates directly with Evil Nginx Pro infrastructure to streamline token theft and post-compromise operations. The panel was identified on three DigitalOcean instances in Santa Clara, California, all serving the same single file HTML and JavaScript application over port 3000. The application mimics the Outlook web app interface with high visual fidelity, but the interface is intended for operators rather than victims. The tooling is designed to manage stolen Microsoft 365 bearer tokens and interact with Microsoft Graph API. There it is again, services throughout a centralized UI. The infrastructure appears to be part of a three-layer adversary-in-the-middle phishing architecture. Evil Nginx handles a credential and token interception upstream, while the panel acts as a management console for imported sessions. The panel pulls the Evil Nginx Pro feed API at configurable intervals ranging from 15 seconds to 5 minutes and automatically imports newly captured tokens as phishing victims complete authentication flows. According to the analysis, this closes a gap that previously required operators to manually extract and reuse tokens across separate tools. The integration specifically references Evil Nginx Pro functionality that is not available in the open source release. Major focus of the research is the way the panel abuses Microsoft's Graph API permissions. A single valid bearer token can provide access to multiple Microsoft 365 services simultaneously, including Outlook mailboxes, OneDrive files, Team Chat, SharePoint sites, OneNote notebooks, calendars, contacts, and potentially tenant-wide administration functions. The panel includes built-in pivots across three services through Graph API endpoints. If the compromised account belongs to a privileged Entra ID administrator, the panel automatically detects the assigned roles and unlocks administrative capabilities that expose tenant-wide user information, audit logs, license assignments, MFA configurations, and risk status data. The article also details how the tooling maintains persistence. Refresh tokens captured during phishing sessions can be silently renewed in the background using Microsoft OAuth token refresh workflows. The application includes a helper proxy component to bypass browser cores restrictions during token refresh operations. Researchers even observed hard-coded use of the Microsoft Office client ID, which is associated with a foci-enabled Microsoft application. Operators can also override the client ID on a per-account basis to accommodate different token capture scenarios. The panel supports exporting all stolen account data into a .m365db JSON file, allowing tokens and sessions to be transferred between operators or reused on other installations. The panel contains extensive post-compromise functionality. Operators can create inbox forwarding rules, send emails directly through victim accounts, enumerate and remove MFA methods, generate temporary access paths, reset passwords, remove devices from enter ID and assign privileged roles. The code snippets shown in the research demonstrate direct graph API calls for deleting authentication methods and dismissing risky user alerts in Microsoft Identity Protection. The researchers ranked the most severe capabilities as role assignment to global administrator, full MFA reset combined with reusable tap issuance, suppression of risky user detections, and silent mailbox forwarding for business email compromise operations. I'm not even going to read the last paragraph. I'm terrified of this, and that you can just probably sign up somewhere and get access to this.
Hey, I mean, yeah, why not? Why not just create a little marketplace and get this out there, right? This is one of those things where, you know, token abuse, admin token abuse, here we go. Look, it's one of those situations where folks out there are, you know, continuing to find, like, Chris, I equate a lot of this stuff to, especially when we talk about kind of Microsoft-centric vulnerabilities or adversary in the middle panels and things like that. Token theft reuse is one of those areas where we've tried to make authentication as simple and straightforward as we can, but we also need to make it somewhat seamless or frictionless. And when you run into things like this, it's creating another thing that an adversary can steal. This is something I actually talk to my students about when I in the class that I teach. There's a lot of times where we talk about kind of browser token theft versus credential theft and some of the differences and whatnot. And the obvious answer, obviously, as everyone knows, is, well, with token theft, an adversary is post MFA. So they can, you know, they don't have to worry about MFA restrictions or, you know, they don't have to worry about trying to figure out what the second factor, the multi-factor is. Same approach here, obviously, because we are talking about token theft, but it just creates such an easier way for adversaries to do a thing, if you will, right? Once you have that idea out there, it's just a matter of time before it becomes commoditized to the point that it is now. There's already been token theft on, you know, various underground marketplaces and stuff. That's not inherently new, but the barrier, as the article calls out, just get lower and lower and lower here, because as we build out more automated capabilities and as we as you know, adversaries have the ability to build out more tooling and they understand more capabilities and they have this little helper called AI that lets them do all sorts of things with programming languages, automating and creating what I'm going to call a better marketplace for this is, it was really just kind of expected, right? Like, yep, they're going to find a way to make more money out of it. And here we are talking about how it is. So I'm with you. It's scary. It's definitely kind of a WTF moment. Like, how do I protect myself here? Like, what do I do? But taking a look at this further, it comes down to, as always, right? The adversary understands a thing. We hope that we'll get some better detections or, you know, some better types of authentication management or intra-product detection capabilities available for us, because we don't want to be in a place where an adversary can live truly unseen by using and abusing these. For anyone who utilizes a Microsoft tech stack, if this is something you're concerned about, folks, the number one thing I will tell you, which I see, I don't see a lot of, I wish I saw more of, was integrated logging. Look, log these platforms, put them to a SIM, grab a Sentinel bucket, whatever the Sentinel thing is called, store them somewhere, right? Store them in a place where you can access them, research them, run queries around them, build detections around them and stuff like that. And just really lean into it, because your admin accounts are your high value target users. So, you know, protect them, turn the amp up to 11 on anything that's admin related.
While you were diatribing there, I realized we haven't talked about AI at all today. This is going to be the first one in a while.
Not yet.
Yeah, in the last one.
No, we're not even.
Yeah, we got. Wow. Yeah, we got one more, and I threw this in just to feel good after my week, and this is a takedown one. So, European and North American law enforcement agencies announcing the dismantling of the first VPN, a VPN service allegedly built to support cyber criminal activity, including ransomware operations, data theft, scanning, and denial of service attacks. The operation was coordinated by France and the Netherlands with support from more than a dozen countries, including the United States, Germany, the United Kingdom, Ukraine, Canada, and several EU member states. Authorities said the investigation began in late 2021 and culminated in synchronized actions during May that included server seizures, infrastructure takedowns, interviews with the administrator, and a house search in Ukraine. According to Europol and Eurojust, FirstVPN marketed itself directly towards criminal users by emphasizing anonymity and resistance to law enforcement cooperation. The service was advertised on Russian language cybercrime forums, including Exploit and XSS, which it was promoted, where it was promoted as infrastructure capable of hiding attacker identities during ransomware campaigns and fraud operations. Investigators stated that the provider claimed it did not store logs and positioned itself outside the reach of legal jurisdictions. Authorities also seized multiple domains related to Tor services connected to the operations. I like how it said claimed it did not store logs. I feel like there might be some juicy in there.
The imagine FBI, that. Someone not telling the truth about logs?
Yeah. The FBI said FirstVPN has been operating since around 2014 and maintained dozens of exit nodes distributed across more than two dozen countries. Investigators linked the infrastructure to at least 25 ransomware groups, including Avedon Ransomware, which reportedly used the service for reconnaissance and intrusion operations. Subscription pricing ranged from low-cost daily access to annual plans costing several hundred dollars, with payment accepted through Bitcoin and multiple electronic payment systems. The article also highlighted the technical capabilities that made the service attractive to threat actors. FirstVPN supported several protocols, including OpenConnect, WireGuard, Outline, and VLESS Reality, alongside encryption technologies such as OpenVPN, ECC, and L2TP over IPsec. The FBI specifically pointed to support for traffic obfuscation features that can disguise VPN traffic as standard HTTPS web traffic, making detection more difficult. Customer support was reportedly provided through a self-hosted Jabber server and Telegram. Archived copies of the service's website showed it advertising anonymity, stability, and security while simultaneously attempting to distance itself from criminal liability by formally prohibiting illegal use of its servers in its FAQ section. So I wonder if that's going to work out for these guys.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I really doubt it. Taking a look at the snapshot here, I mean, hey, these guys were running a good thing for a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Great. Takedowns, love them. We're all about them here. We like good news like that. It's a great way to finish the week. Good riddance.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to end it. I'm going to go get a warm compress. My face still sucks. Thanks for coming out, Matt. I'm glad we did it. We pushed it back till Friday. We got it done. I'm hoping to be back in my studio next week. I think I did say I would be back in the studio today, but I'm going to give myself a pass given the horrible week I've had with my face.
All good. So. And I didn't want to rib you on it. You did say 2 weeks, but I think as a very frequent guest here, I will happily say take another week if you need to. But just note that I will start to bring things up like... Chris, you sure this house is real? No, I'm just kidding. Take care, get better, man. I'll see you next time.
Yeah, thanks a lot, sir. Take care, everybody.
Thanks. See ya.
And that brings us to the end of another Intel Chat. You can support this show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend or subscribing and giving us a rating or leaving a comment on your chosen podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation and access the intel we talk about in real time, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.